incidents over these past 2 months have shocked and saddened Hong Kong people.
A major announcement for some from Hong Kong's government. This is Thursday, the 5th of September, and this is VOA Asia. I'm Ira Melman.
And I'm Kelly Jean Kelly. We are in Washington. Also on VOA Asia, what the people of Taiwan have to say about the Hong Kong protests.
The United Nations is concerned about the U.S. administration's asylum policy. It's all on today's
VOA Asia. Hong Kong Chief Executive Carrie Lam says the government will formally withdraw an extradition bill that sparked 3 months of growing and often violent pro-democracy demonstrations. In a videotape message released Wednesday by her office, Lam said she was withdrawing the bill to fully allay public concerns. The bill would have permitted criminal suspects to be sent to mainland China for trial in courts controlled by the ruling Communist Party. Lam said she wants to restore peace and order to Hong Kong. Wednesday's surprise decision meets one of 5 demands made by protesters. Those include an independent probe into allegations of police brutality and the long-stated goal of greater democracy for the Chinese-controlled territory. But pro-democracy legislator Claudia Mo told reporters that the decision to pull the legislation was too little, too late. Wednesday's announcement comes just days after Lam was heard on an audio recording obtained by Reuters News Service. In it, she told Hong Kong business leaders that she had caused a huge havoc when she introduced the extradition bill that sparked the protests. In the recording, she can be heard saying, "If I have a choice, the first thing is to quit." Protest leaders took the remark to mean that officials in Beijing would not permit her to resign.
But will she quit? And will the Hong Kong government accede to the protesters' remaining demands? Joining us on VOA Asia is Christopher Ray, professor of modern Chinese literature and the associate head of the Department of Asian Studies at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver. He joins us on Skype. Chris, thanks for being with us. Do you think the Hong Kong government will indeed relent on any of the other demands of the protesters? And that, of course, includes Carrie Lam stepping down.
It remains to be seen. I think that the formal withdrawal of the bill for good is a positive step. But overall, her response has been very underwhelming. And this is a leader who has already lost the confidence of the Hong Kong people. And will she make any further concessions? I think she'll essentially have to if she wants to remain in office. Of course, she could serve out her term and have a terrible reputation in the history books if she does not have an independent investigation into police brutality or meet the other demands of the protesters. She's kind of created this crisis of her own accord, right, where Beijing is going to be mad at her if she makes some decisions, and the Hong Kong people will be mad at her if she goes in the opposite direction. If she wants to make a positive impact for Hong Kong, she will have to do something that's really radical. And this includes universal suffrage. And as a first step, right, if she wants to restore any confidence in her government, the police brutality associated with these protests has been quite horrific, right? This goes beyond the tear gas, beyond the rubber bullets. Some of the latest reports are we even have video of police in riot gear sexually threatening protesters. So the police force, right, and the government that stands behind it, its reputation is in tatters now. And so this 4-point statement that Carrie Lam has put out is like a Band-Aid where Hong Kong has internal bleeding and broken bones. So I think she needs to do something far more radical to restore any confidence.
The protesters have already said that they are calling for more protest if indeed that does happen, presumably this weekend. How do you expect the police to react?
I think the police need to be taken in hand by the civilian government and told that this use of excessive force is absolutely unacceptable. Will that happen? I don't know the inner workings of the Hong Kong police force. I don't know who is in charge. But I think that they will need to exercise restraint because the pendulum has already swung to an extreme of violence, and it really needs to swing back. And will this happen? I really don't know. I think that the protesters would prefer peaceful negotiation and discussion. I don't think any of the protesters want violence, but some of the violence you've seen on both sides has come from this escalation that has really been needless.
How much control do you think Beijing has over Carrie Lam?
I think pretty significant control. And she is not, you know, directly elected by the Hong Kong people. She is really very closely tied to Beijing, serves at Beijing's behest. She has not yet shown any significant independence or autonomy that would contravene that view. That's why I think she really does need to do something radical that shows that her primary loyalty and allegiance is to the Hong Kong people.
This is almost a restart of all of these. At least a lot of people are hoping it is a restart of the protesters protesting a few things and the government reacting. What's the possibility of that happening?
Well, this has been an extremely well-documented protest. We have video, we have transcripts, we have public statements, right? The world has been paying very close attention to this. And so it cannot be swept away, right? We have a significant archive that people will be debating about for years. And so the question is indeed, how do we move forward? And I think we don't move forward naively. So the Hong Kong government should be under no illusions that this simple four-point proposal by Carrie Lam is going to be enough to undo the damage that's been done so far. So that would be one. Another would be for essentially an abject apology on the part of the government and on the part of the police for a lot of the brutality and a lot of the condescension towards the Hong Kong people that we've seen so far. This is a really unique and special place, right? This is a global city. This is not just a Chinese thing, right? This is a human rights and civil liberties thing. And so I think that's one reason that people across the world really should be paying very close attention.
Christopher Ray is the professor of modern Chinese literature and associate head of the Department of Asian Studies at the University of British Columbia in Vancouver, Canada. We invite you to read more on our top story by following us on Facebook at VOA Asia and the voanews.com website.
These are among the top Asia stories you'll find right now on voanews.com.
An explosion at an Indian fireworks factory has killed at least 16.
Human Rights Watch says that media bills in Nepal undermine freedom of speech.
Decades after fleeing, Kashmiri Hindus are still fearing going back.
Ex-U.S. envoys warn that a full pullout from Afghanistan could ignite a total civil war.
Protest back an Indian reporter charged after a school meal expose.
Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on Facebook at VOA Asia or on the voanews.com website.
VOA Asia continues. Hong Kong's protests have received worldwide attention, but perhaps nowhere has the pro-democracy movement resonated more powerfully than in nearby Taiwan. The self-ruled island, which is claimed by China, has become a source of solidarity and refuge for Hong Kong, as VOA's Bill Gallo reports from Taipei.
What happens today in Hong Kong could happen tomorrow in Taiwan. That's the concern at this Lenin Wall set up in support of Hong Kong's protests.
This is a reminder that one country, two systems is a lie.
One country, two systems. That's the model China set up to govern Hong Kong, and the same one it someday wants to apply to democratic Taiwan. But almost no one here wants anything to do with it.
It won't work. We are against it. We want the rule of law, but they are a totalitarian regime.
China claims Taiwan, even though the island has ruled itself for more than 70 years. While many support closer economic ties with Beijing, polls suggest an overwhelming majority oppose a setup like Hong Kong's.
We want to protect ourselves, and we want to make sure that the Chinese way of dealing with Hong Kong does not happen to Taiwan.
Taiwan's government has been outspoken in support of the Hong Kong protests.
And we are watching very carefully, and I'm sure the people here in Taiwan are also watching very carefully on how the Chinese government is dealing with Hong Kong. We are very concerned that the Chinese government might try to crush the protesters in a more violent way.
As Hong Kong becomes more violent, some in Taiwan are offering more than just symbolic support. This footage, shared with VOA by activists, shows residents donating helmets, which are in short supply in Hong Kong. So far, the group has sent more than 600 helmets. A small but growing number of Hong Kongers have also moved to Taiwan. Among them is bookseller Lam Wing Kee, who was detained by mainland Chinese agents but escaped to Taiwan on bail.
Of course I miss Hong Kong, but I'm happier living here.
Lam ran the Causeway Bay Books Store, which sold books critical of China's leaders. He was among five Hong Kong booksellers who went missing in 2015. Lam is trying to reopen the store in Taipei, but has no plans to return home.
They can just disappear you for no reason. Where will you be safe? I can tell you that if in the future Hong Kong is still ruled by mainland China, not a single Hong Konger is safe.
Taiwan's president has offered to take in some Hong Kongers on humanitarian grounds, angering China. It's not clear how many have taken up that offer, as Taiwan lacks a formal process for asylum. But it is clear that both Hong Kong and Taiwan are staring down Beijing, and in some ways, helping each other as they do it. Bill Gallo, VOA News, Taipei.
Happening now in Asia News, a bus has crashed on wet New Zealand roads, killing five Chinese tourists. The area is popular among visitors for its boiling mud pools and indigenous Maori culture. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia.
The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, is concerned about the U.S. administration's asylum policy, which she says may be in breach of international human rights law. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from the High Commissioner's headquarters in Geneva.
The UN rights chief does not question the sovereign right of the United States or any other country to adopt migration and asylum policies that are in line with their national interests. But she says the laws must be in keeping with international human rights law. Michelle Bachelet says policies that restrict migration must be in compliance with standards that do not put people's lives at risk. She notes migrants unable to enter a country through a legal crossing point will find other routes, which could put them in danger. She says she has some reservations about the new Trump policy of keeping asylum seekers waiting on the Mexican side of the border until their cases come to court. Before anyone is returned to Mexico, she says the United States must study the case to determine whether the person is a refugee and entitled to international protection.
We believe that the policies, measures that have been adopted by many countries, and in the case of the United States, some countries like Central American countries, are putting people in more vulnerable situations.
Bachelet tells VOA she is opposed to the U.S. policy of family separation. She says she has received reports that family separations also are occurring in Mexico. In July, she notes, the U.S. House Oversight and Reform Committee said that hundreds of children have been separated from their families since the Trump administration's zero-tolerance policy was enacted in June 2018.
We do believe that the arbitrary separation of families constitute an arbitrary and unlawful interference with family life and a grave violation of the rights of the child. It's against all the legal conventions and international human rights law and the laws for the child.
Bachelet says detaining children for longer than 21 days is both unconscionable and unlawful. She says she has heard it could take up to 2 years before asylum cases are adjudicated. She calls this a matter of great concern and hopes the process can be speeded up. If not, she urges U.S. authorities to ensure that asylum seekers are protected while they are waiting. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Coming up, a remote control apron. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia is on Twitter. Follow us at VOA Asia for developing stories in Asia, perhaps close to you. Our Twitter feed also has updates on programs you can hear and see, with links to easily find them. VOA Asia Twitter, we're always online for you.
This news from VOA Asia. Stocks rebounded worldwide Wednesday. Upbeat economic data from China, along with hopes that Britain's exit from the European Union may be postponed, have helped revive investors' appetite for risk. Visit VOA Asia Facebook every day for top stories and great features to see and share. You're listening to VOA Asia.
VOA Asia continues. Online cooking videos are an indispensable tool for at-home chefs, but using a mobile device in the kitchen can get messy. A New York University student has solved the problem by turning the traditional apron into a remote control for devices. Tina Trin reports.
Anna Oh is a novice when it comes to cooking, so she does what many do to improve their culinary skills: watch online videos. But things tend to get messy.
It was annoying to touching my iPad frequently with my greasy hand.
Oh came up with a hands-free solution she calls the Recipe Controller. It's a smart apron prototype that lets users navigate online videos without touching them.
You can use this apron like remote controller to control your video contents while cooking.
The apron uses an Arduino microcontroller, a single-chip computer that has Bluetooth connectivity. Everything is connected. Even the apron's print.
This is looks like just normal print, but actually this is conductive fabric, so I program it.
The apron relies on soft circuitry, the use of alternative materials to create electrical circuits instead of traditional methods like wiring and soldering, making them easier to integrate into fabrics and wearables.
Sewing this print to the metal slab with the conductive thread. So it's connected each metal snap with each print.
Each print is programmed with a different function, and tapping them will pause and play videos or rewind and forward them. Need to raise the volume? Simply slide this pole left or right. The rope that it hangs on is conductive. Oh considered incorporating spoken commands, but the technology turns out to be less helpful in the kitchen.
Hey Alexa, Siri, pause the video. It's relatively long, but tapping is more simple.
For Oh, the best creations are equal parts design and tech. The electronic module detaches so that the apron can be thrown in the wash.
I want it. My apron looks like just normal apron.
It's a recipe with delicious results. Tina Trin, VOA News, New York.
Here's a news break from VOA Asia. Chinese telecom equipment maker Huawei is accusing U.S. officials of trying to break into its information systems, but it gave no evidence to support the claim. U.S. President Donald Trump said only that Huawei is a big concern of our military, of our intelligence agencies. This is VOA Asia.
Welcome to the world of insect cuisine. The UN says billions of people around the world already eat bugs, and farming insects is much better for the environment than raising cattle or pigs. Now, a pop-up restaurant in South Africa is trying to make eating insects a gourmet experience for people who may still find the idea a little creepy.
Yeah.
VOA's Haresh Arabasadi digs into this story.
In this bag, Chef Mario Barnard holds what he calls the food of the future.
It takes a very small land and very little water to make a lot of insects.
Barnard first tried grilled scorpions and crunchy insects mixed with garlic and spices on a trip to Thailand. He says he was grossed out, but inspired to make his own dishes highlighting bugs.
Didn't taste like insects. It tasted like croquettes. It tasted like potato and chickpea with slightly nutty, spicy into it, which I believe is the insect.
Barnard says achieving the right flavor is an exact science. It starts well before lunch crawls into his kitchen.
They will get that the taste from whatever they eat. So if it's compost, they will get like this rotten vegetable taste. So that's why they have a very specific diet, and we have somebody farming it for us here.
Scientists tout insect-based food as sustainable, cheap, and high in protein, fiber, and minerals.
A lot of foods that we're eating right now is too much chemical and stuff, so that's killing our body. But this is a natural food, so.
The United Nations Food and Agriculture Organization says in no uncertain terms, farming bugs as food is better for the planet than raising traditional livestock.
As global population grows as well, agriculture land becomes less and less the more people we have. It's good for the environment, and also we try to steer clear of animal cruelty, and it's the food of the future.
If any of this has you hungry for bugs, Barnard's pop-up restaurant, The Insect Experience in Cape Town, is due to stay open until November, well beyond the original closure date. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News, Washington.
Have you ever eaten bugs?
I have, Ira. They were good. Crunchy.
I might have tried them a couple of places where I once lived, but I just ate it once or twice. People can't live on Mars yet, but an agency in Spain is... How's that for a transition? People can't live on Mars yet, but an agency in Spain is letting visitors pretend to. The group has replicated the Martian environment in an underground cave. VOA's Lavitsa Hoek reports on how the project works and who comes to experience life on the red planet.
Scientists, architects, and developers have converted a large cave deep in the mountains of Cantabria in northern Spain, about 90 kilometers west of Bilbao, into a human colony with living conditions similar to those that would be needed for life on Mars. They say the lack of atmosphere, extremely low temperatures, and presence of cosmic rays on the red planet would probably force new societies to settle below ground. Ares Station offers adventurous travelers an opportunity to try it. Before entering the cave for 4 days and three nights, participants have to undergo 26 days of online training and 3 days of intensive training in the regional capital, Santander. When they enter Ares Station, they become astrolanders, which means pioneers facing the unknown.
What we were doing for all the time there, it was troubleshooting and solving all problem by problem just to make experiments working, another experiments working, something else working. And this was really great because this is what I like.
Astrolanders live in protective habitat but have to venture out to explore, carry out spacewalks, experience the feeling of weightlessness, and learn how to grow food in specialized laboratories.
It was a super great experience to be on Mars for 4 days. We were in a cave now, and we always had those great moments every day where you went on an EVA, it's called an extravehicular activity, where you go out of the habitat where we were sleeping in, and then you were going out in the cave, and it just looked like Mars. Because on Mars, you're allowed to live in the lava tubes, so it's perfect.
A maximum of 10 people can take part in each mission, which is not cheap. The price of $6,600 per person may seem astronomical, but for many, the experience is worth it.
An experience that totally takes you out of your comfort zone. It is another world. You have to adapt, change your mindset. And everything that is ordinary, you have to learn how to do it differently from what you used to do on Earth. It really is another world.
Astroland says its Ares station has carried out its first mission successfully and is now open to new groups of explorers. Zlatica Hoek, VOA News, Washington.
You have been listening to VOA Asia. Get our program on iTunes and SoundCloud. Download our podcast and take VOA Asia with you. You can find us at voanews.com.
Let's hear from you as well, VOA Asia Facebook and our email, voaasia@voanews.com. Thanks to our director, Tracy Carter, our engineer, Nelson Lopes, our managing editor, Diane Gao, and our VOA Asia team of Jim Stapes-Stevenson and Keith Lane. I'm Ira Melbourne in Washington. We welcome our newest edition, Kelly Jean Kelly. Make sure you enjoy your day.